You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats?
Hodgepodge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
From New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental on MLSsoccer.com and Sirius, XMFC Channel 85, in our new digs, the new green room with the field on the wall. It's a little bit of a mind game here, but I'm with Dave Goss, of course, now at the Octagon. Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. Guys, I've tweeted it, I don't know, 3 or 4 times now. The MLS offseason is arguably better than the MLS season. Like, I like soccer being played, but I'm even more in love with imagining what soccer might look like in, like, 3 months' time. This is wild. Darlington Nagbe, he's changing addresses. He's going to Atlanta, $1.65 million, or up to, I should say, an allocation money, going back to the Portland Timbers. Things are changing in Portland. We've got Atlanta United president Darren Eales. He's going to join us in a little bit to explain that deal. By the way, we'll also be asking him about Ezequiel Barco, who is maybe the most exciting prospect in Argentina right now and is likely to be moving to Atlanta. We're going to talk LAFC. They're making moves again. Sasha Kleshin rumored to head to Bob Bradley's boys. There's more rumors to go around in the mailbag, burner accounts, and our reading comprehension is epically bad. So that's all to come. What I do want to get out there, Dave, is that I have committed to a new intro for the year 2018.
And sounds I'm collecting, like a personal
problem. Yes, it does sound like a personal problem. I'm collecting audio. Do you have any suggestions for what we should put in the intro? We got a lot of ideas here. We got the Pass Mount Trey speech. We had Josie's epic MLS Cup speech. What are we doing from Twelman? Tattooed Millionaires from Alexi. Pablo Mastroianni, stats will lose the human spirit every day of the week. We got Baron Tees. Everybody wants us to keep the are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Anything to add here?
I would add Maximus' speech that he gives to the Roman Emperor in Gladiator. And that would be it.
Yeah, what's that got to do with anything?
It has to do with everything all the time. It's always relevant.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll workshop this a little bit more. If you've got any ideas, hit us up. 401-206-0MLS. Call or text the Hot Take Hotline. Hit us up via email, Twitter, whatever you want to do. But we did have one big win this year when it comes to our intro. Brian Valadares says he settled a Modge Podge hodgepodge debate he had with his girlfriend inside a Target.
Nice.
With our intro.
Nailed it, Brian.
So that's basically the reason why this podcast exists.
I like that he worked a league sponsor in there as well. That's very well done, Brian.
Yes, lots of synergy. Otherwise, that tweet would not have made the show. No, I'm just kidding. We still would have read the tweet. Let's get right into it, guys. There's so much to talk about here. Darlington Nagbe, as I said, headed to Atlanta United along with Arroquio, the defender they signed midseason, but he's going to get cut. His salary is going to be off the books. They're going to buy him out. Here's the price for Nagbe, basically. $650K in GAM in 2018, $100K in GAM in 2019. That's a lot of GAM. $300K in TAM in 2018, and then up to $600K in future TAM based on performances along with a 2018 international roster spot. So if you're wondering what's going to trigger that $600K in future TAM, this is from some folks I trust out there. $150K is the league MVP. Probably not going to happen. $100K, 12 goals or more in a single season. Probably not going to happen. $100K, 15 or more assists in a single season. That could happen. I think Nagbe's going to rack up second assists like crazy and get a lot of primary as well. $250K is team-wide for Atlanta. Top 3 in MLS points. Plus, they win MLS Cup. That could happen. Doyle, that feels to me like Portland betting on Atlanta's success in a way. And I think they have reason to bet on it because I think Darlington Nagbe is going to be a completely different player in Atlanta in just the fact that the burden on his shoulders, the responsibility is gone. The things that he's good at, those are the only things Tata Martino is going to care about. He's got 4 attackers in front of him that if he puts them in the right position – success is going to follow, and I see you like leaning back in your chair, rolling your eyes. Do you doubt
because the cat's on the ceiling?
Do you doubt my analysis?
I think on the attacking side of the ball, it feels like a very natural fit because of all the reasons you said. Especially if you play Nagbe as that number 8, you know, that central midfield, which is, by the way, Carlos Carmona was the guy who played that role last year, and he's pretty damn good. I have my doubts about Nagby's ability to fit into Tata Martino's high-pressure system. The weakest part of Nagby's game is his defensive awareness, and specifically on the repress. Once the ball is lost, or in the moment before the ball is lost, Nagby tends to be lost. And that is not a guy who I see working well with Tata Martino. Nagby moves well within the block of a low block system like what Portland have played. And Portland have been a very back to front team the last couple of years. If you ask him to play on the front foot, especially in a spot that has a lot of defensive responsibilities in terms of covering gaps, forcing turnovers, making sure the second line doesn't get broken through, and that you give up breakouts in the other direction, I don't see that as a strength of his. I see that as a big glaring weakness. And I remain a little bit befuddled by this trade, because Darlington Nagby, from where I sit, is not really an Atlanta United type player.
I think when you look at Darlington Nagby, though, his speed, his athleticism, those are the types of things that fit in with this team. His ability.
His ability to keep the ball.
Yeah, his ability to keep the ball. And like Weeby said, his want and need to keep the ball moving and set guys up and not take that final pass and not take that final shot, which won't be required of him. And there won't really be space to do it a lot of times. But then when Doyle talks about defensively, I don't know that him and Carlos Carmona work. I don't know that Carlos Carmona is going to be there next year.
Yeah, there are a lot of rumors right now out of Chile that he could go back to. I think it's Colo-Colo or it's Universidad de Chile. It's a big club there.
So every team's getting a bunch of TAM money, and I think that they have to go out and find their version of that defensive midfielder who's going to cover a ton of ground and do that work next to Nagby, similar to what Chara did the year that they won MLS Cup. It was obviously a different setup that Portland had than Atlanta had, but you can still find a partner, I think, for Nagby that fits. Now, are they as good defensively? No, but they were the second best scoring team in the league this year. Darlington Nagby makes them more dangerous. Barco makes them more dangerous. They're going to be an attack-minded team. They're not going to be a great defensive team. They're trying to put together.
They still had one of the best defenses in the league last year, and they reinforced. Franco Escobar in. You've got the Jose Hernandez, the young left back that's come in to reinforce Greg Garza in case of injury, or maybe even take his spot. Who knows?
Yeah. So they're investing money in there, and they brought in Mitch Hildebrand as a good backup keeper as well. But this is a team
re-signed
that's.
Re-signed Jeff Aronowitz. We'll throw that out there.
This is a team that's going to try and set the record for goals scored in a season. That's the reality of who they're going to be. Nagby fits that. And when you talk about that high-speed, high-powered game, they don't need to be able to defend well if they're up 3-0 in the first half.
And they don't lose the ball.
Yeah, and they're not
going to be every game. They generate their offense off of their defense. That's the thing. They are one of the elite transition teams in the history of MLS.
But that's not the repress. That's the initial press, right? That's when you try and play the ball out of the back.
It's both. It's both. And look, this is. When Benny Failhaber was exiled from New England, he had the same strikes against him. He just was not interested in playing any sort of defense, and could you really fit him in if you're not building the team around him? And he's a similar age that Nagby is, and obviously Sporting KC's press and repress are both elite in this league, and Failhaber has became within 6 months a huge part of it. So there's precedent for a guy like Nagby, or who had similar faults as Nagby, coming into a situation like this and figuring it out. I just don't think it's as snug a fit as you guys are making it out to be. Talent wise, of course, nobody's ever doubted Nagby's talent, but this game is about more than talent. It's about fit and cohesion and chemistry, and if you're lacking those last two in a high pressing scheme, you're opening yourself up for vicious counterattacks going in the other direction. And I think that will end up being the measure of whether this trade is a success for Atlanta United.
Darren Eels will be with us in just 1 second. I just want to add something to that, Doyle. We've complained about Nagby not challenging himself for years and years and years now. 7 years in MLS, and people are always saying, hey, get out of your comfort zone. Leave that comfort zone. Get away from Caleb Porter. Well, Caleb Porter is gone. He's out of Portland. He's gone to a place where, in your words here, he is challenging himself, because his maybe weakest asset is now one that he must improve on. in order to fit in with this team. And I'm with you. I think he fits in every way from the attacking side. And, you know, God help the opposing central midfielders and defenders who see Miguel Almiron or whoever it might be if he's not there, if they sell him for many millions of dollars, and Nagby barreling in their direction on the counterattack. Because if those two teams, those teams do find a way to counter, and they got Gonzalez Pires on the other side, and they've got Greg Garza, and they've got whoever it is, Franco Escobar, Michael Parkhurst, Brad Guzan in goal, if you don't punish them and you commit forward, you're going to get punished on the other side. Because this team with Tito Villalba, Joseph Martinez with, please, 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 a full season, is going to destroy you. And I'm completely cool with Atlanta United being a 5-3 team. Go try to beat people 5-3.
Yeah, it's
fine. Like, I don't think it's going to come to that. Because
It's not that's not playoff soccer. Like, that's not what the – look at what just happened to TFC. But it'll get you there. And if you're so dangerous that you could still muddle your way through at that point, you have the shot to host an MLS Cup. So it's not the perfect model, but it's how he clearly – Tata clearly wants to play. It was successful this year. You can't deny that. You've got a full squad that had to learn each other this year. This year, now coming into 2018, you're going to put together 2-3 new pieces on top of a team that already knows how to play together, and you hope a healthy Joseph Martinez.
I just like the fact that on this team, from an attacking perspective, Nagby is going to be asked to be the 5th, 6th, or 7th best player. Because those outside backs are going to stream forward. They're going to be in the attack, and the front four is going to have all the responsibility on the world for them. Though you make a good point, though. He's got to figure out how to play both ways in that number 8 position. I like what you said as well, Dave. Chira, we'll see what happens in this transfer window. The man who would know is Darren Eales, the president of Atlanta United. He is on the phone now. Darren, how's it going?
Yeah, good. Thanks, Andre.
So let's just jump right into it. We've been breaking down this Nagby deal, and it stole all the headlines. It is, if he hits all the future considerations, the biggest trade in MLS history. Walk us through your side of the deal. Why Darlington Nagby? Why is he worth this amount of allocation money?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're really excited to get Darlington on the team. He was, in terms of those players in the league, he was sort of top of our list, and I'll be honest with you. He was someone that, you know, when we were chatting about him, I didn't realistically think there'd be an option for us to do a trade, but we were able to work something out with Portland. And, you know, for us, I think you've seen we've got quite a lot of firepower on our team in terms of goal scorers and assists, but what Darlington brings is that ability to be a connector, to keep the ball under pressure. It doesn't really matter how many players he's got in his back. He's got that ability not to lose the ball. So I think for us in particular, I think he's going to be a really good fit. And in terms of players, and we always do this when we're scouting, it reminds us of players from other teams. So for me, it's a little bit like Moussa Dembele was when I was at Tottenham. He's got that ability. You know, the crowd might get frustrated every now and then that he's not shooting more or scoring more goals, but actually what he brings to the team is that ability to get the ball when he's in trouble and not lose it and help sort of progress the ball up the pitch. So we're really excited. I think he's going to be a great fit for the team. And obviously he's a great character and that, you know, a lovely bloke as well.
Everyone knows how talented Nagby is. What did you guys identify coming out of this season that you need in this team to improve? Why go after a player?
Yeah, look, I mean, we're always trying to improve. And, you know, we always knew the first season was going to be the toughest. We had to bring the, you know, 28 players together, a coach, and sort of meld them into a team straight off the bat. So, you know, the first year was always going to be the toughest, and then it was about how do we add players. And looking, Darlington, you know, another attribute we get with him is he's 27, you know, he's been in the league, he's someone that, you know, whatever happens down the line in terms of players moving on, he's going to be a core piece of our team in the future. So again, that was another attraction to us, to be able to bring someone in who's already playing in the league, so we don't have any of that risk of bringing someone from outside.
We're speculating here on the show about how this might translate into your midfield. And Carlos Carmona, Darren, is one of the players in this league that I just felt like didn't get enough hype. So quietly effective, and maybe it's that quietly part that prevented it from it, or maybe it's Almiron and Tito and Joseph and Yamil Assad and all these other guys. Is he a player that you want to bring back at this point? Because there's been some rumors about him with Chile.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, it's funny sort of reading the, you know, some of the comments and speculation. I mean, look, Carlos was an absolute warrior for us last year. You know, he's someone that is key part of Tata's philosophy. You know, yeah, there's a lot of focus on our attacking prowess, but I think if you look at our team over the second half of the season in particular, we really stepped it up defensively. And I think that was, you know, a lot of that can be put down to the fact that, you know, it takes time for the players to get to know some of that more sort of strategic tactics that Tata was trying to implement across the team for defending. And Carlos is a crucial part of that. So, you know, I think, you know, he's someone that very much is going to be part of the team next year.
So before we move off Nagby here, Darren, I, I look at him and I think about players who maybe never find the right fit for their game and their personality. And at times, Portland was a fit. And I think back to 2015, and Dave mentioned it earlier, going to the MLS Cup, he really shined in that number eight role. But he was always expected to be maybe more than he was from an attacking perspective. On your team, he's maybe the fifth best attacking option. And that's not denigrating Darlington at all. When you talked to him about this move, what did he say? We've always talked about a fresh new start for Darlington, and he might need one. Did you feel any of that coming through from him when you spoke to him?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you raise an interesting point. I think it's a classic trade here where both sides win. I know everyone tried to try and say who's won this trade, but I think for us, you know, we got a player that is going to fit our system, gives him a chance, Darlington, to have a fresh start. And I think, you know, from Portland's perspective, they get a chance now with the, you know, the allocation money that they're getting from them and a new coach coming in to perhaps do things a little bit differently. I totally agree with you. Sometimes you see players that can excel at certain clubs, and we certainly think, and I think Darlington does as well, that in our setup, in our system, it's going to be more effective for him, and we're going to get, you know, basically his strengths are going to be attenuated with our team.
For the second straight year, Darren, we've been out on the road covering MLS Cup, and the biggest conversation everyone's had is about the rumors of Atlanta United and a South American playmaker. This time it's Ezequiel Barco, and some crazy numbers being thrown around, incredible talent from the young man. Where are your guys' conversations at in terms of filling in that attacking core?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, you know, we're always looking to every sort of transfer window, we're going to look to try and improve the team, and that's not going to change, whether it's second year or fifth year or seventh year. You know, we're always going to be looking to see what we can do to improve the squad. So, you know, we're certainly going to spend this winter trying to find and identify targets. There's obviously some additional target allocation money available as well, which helps us. And another thing, just to point out, even on the sort of Darlington, you know, it probably got lost because people don't know or aren't aware of how much allocation money is around. But, you know, we put together the team last year, but we were very conscious of not using up, well, we hardly used any of our allocation money that we were given as an expansion team, keeping our powder dry for the right time. And this was, you know, in Darlington, this was a player where we felt, right, you know, it's worth us sort of looking after that allocation money because now we've got the player that we want to spend it on.
Of course, when you have an owner who has an investment, they like to see return on that investment. Was this year and the success of this team a big piece for you to go to Arthur Blank and say, hey, we see other young players in South America who have big numbers but could be big-time players for us?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think, you know, obviously we had a five-year plan going in right from sort of when I first met with Arthur, and we hadn't deviated from that at all. But clearly, you know, I think Arthur was taking me on my word when we started, and now it's a lot easier when you've actually got, you know, your three designated players that you sign score over 40 goals between them. Then he has a lot more confidence, and, you know, I mean, Arthur is great because, you know, he has done an incredible investment in the stadium, the training ground, and the team itself, and, you know, how he deals in Atlanta. But he also, you know, brings people in and lets them do their job. And I think that's, you know, great credit to him. He's not like, you know, some other owners that I've worked with in the past that could be a little bit more micromanaging. And sometimes that can get frustrating.
So before we get you out of here, and we're talking about the attack, and, of course, the defense has been reinvigorated as well with some new faces from South America. Tata Martino, Paul McDonough, Carlos Bocanegra, yourself. I look at your guys' management team, and then I look around MLS, and I'm not sure I see one that's as balanced. Every single little piece you guys can fill with expertise. When you look at this transfer window, and you've tap danced well about around these Barco rumors here, what about your guys' attributes makes you so effective right now in building MLS rosters, and how does this TAM influx help you do what you need to do to ultimately go get MLS Cup?
Yeah, like, I don't think it's different from any sort of team or any business. You need to have different strengths. And I think in the group across the technical side, everyone's got different strengths. Obviously, Carlos is a legend of the U.S. national team and knows the MLS well. Paul was a former agent, so he brings that skill set. In Tata Martino, we've got, you know, one of the top coaches in the world who's been at Barcelona and Argentina and all those contacts. And obviously my background was, you know, in the Premier League and dealing with, you know, sort of the global game and a lot of transfers. So I think we all sort of complement each other well on that. And, but, you know, there's some great teams out there putting together rosters. I mean, look at Toronto and, you know, bringing Vasquez in. I think the MLS is a league. This is an exciting time because all of us can help each other in terms of, selling the league and helping that pipeline of young talent to come across. And it's clearly the way forward. It's, you know, this is a way that you can bring players in that improves the standard, improves the, you know, the quality of play, hopefully lets teams be more effective against the Mexican sides in the CONCACAF Champions League. But at the same time, you know, you can reinvest those funds if you get the right players, you know, help sort of sell them onto Europe and then reinvest the funds. I think it's a win-win for everybody.
All right, one more before you go. You mentioned reinvestment, selling players. Are we going to see Almirón and Joseph in March? Please tell me yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I mean, we're a team that, we're excited with our first year. We've got an amazing fan base. We're trying to put together a team that can make the playoffs and, you know, ideally we'd like to win MLS Cup. So, you know, certainly they're going to be back and, you know, we're pretty excited about the team that we're putting together.
Certainly everybody's excited, I think, about Atlanta, except for maybe Eastern Conference opponents. Darren Eales, the president of the club. Darren, good luck going forward. We'll be watching you guys closely, okay?
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right, guys. So Darren Eales, as one will do in the middle of negotiations, I presume, based on all the media coverage, because, by the way, Barco basically said goodbye last night after winning Copa Sudamericana. His coach said, hey, it sucks, but we have to sell some players. It looks likely that Atlanta United are going to land this incredible talent. 18 years old, 50-plus appearances for Independiente, Argentina U20s, 12 to 14 million seems about where this transfer fee is going to fall. How does this change them, Doyle? Does it change them, or is he's not Yamil Assad, it doesn't seem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough to tell exactly. I'll admit I haven't watched a ton of this kid, of Independiente, but it seems like he could play anywhere in the attack, and it seems like this is taking the sort of blueprint that Atlanta set up last year by signing an exciting youngish talent in Miguel Almirón with a sort of a global profile and going even younger and arguably even more talented. Ideally it goes back to the Nagby thing we were talking about. When you have, you know, when you're building a team, the first thing to get is high level talent. That is like usually the defining factor of who's good and who's bad. And Barco certainly seems to fit that profile. And it's another case, it feels, it's another case of Arthur Blank walking up to the table sort of daring the other MLS owners to match him. And we'll see if anyone takes him up on the offer.
Like Doyle, I am not an expert, but from what I've seen...
I will say I'm not an expert either, other than once again... pulsating techno-based highlight videos on the internet and reports from Argentina.
Okay, so I was going to say, from what I've seen, thanks for cutting me off there,
Rima,
that was well-timed.
Mm-hmm.
He seems to be a player who likes the ball at his feet more than Assad and is not going to stretch the field wide as much, wants to come inside and create off his own foot or connect with players, which Almirón is very good at as well, but you could see at times, obviously the Columbus game, the last one, although they created a ton of chances, that there maybe is the need for that, not the need for that player, but he can add to them.
Yep.
He's not going to get in the way, I don't think, but he's not, like you said, going to be the same high-pressing, pull teams wide a little bit more player as Assad. So that left-back position probably gets even more important.
And one of the things to know about Atlanta United last year, they were down near the bottom of the league in 1v1. Takeouts,
yeah.
in dribbles, attempted and completed. They have fast and skillful attackers, but they do that sort of within a team structure. Barco has a bit of a reputation of being maybe a little bit more of a soloist.
Yep.
So he'll probably have to bend a little bit part of his game to sort of fit within Tata Martino's scheme. But also he probably brings something that they didn't really have a ton of last year. The Alba and Assad are great, but they're not guys who just go at you and rip you apart off the dribble. Barco can. Like, all you have to do is look at, you know, that highlight reel that Andrew was, I believe, dancing to before.
Yes, I dance at my desk all the time, especially in transfer season. We haven't really talked about the Timbers here, and that's important because Darlington Nagby has been a foundational piece for this club for 7 years now. Giovanni Savarese, reports are that he will be announced at some point here as the head coach. He left the Cosmos. Writing is on the wall. What are the Timbers doing, Doyle? What do you make of this move from their side? Now they have allocation money. That's good, but they just lost a super talented player.
They did. It felt like maybe it was time to move on. You know, hopefully it works out best for the player, and hopefully it works out best for the club as well. And this gives them, I don't want to say a clean slate, because a lot of the core is still going to be back there. But between the allocation money and obviously the contract hit and getting Orokio, the defender, off their books as well, suddenly Gavin Wilkinson and presumably Gio Savarese, they have a huge amount of cash to play with and a couple of roster slots to play with. Portland can go in a couple different ways here. They were they're very back-to-front team. Last season, and that they didn't hold the ball a ton in the attacking third, and they were all about transition play, and that's good, but it's only taken them so far. They can, you know, maybe invest in getting guys who can sort of go back to a more free-flowing and kind of high-pressure, or medium-pressure, rather, group that they've been at times in the past. But as with everything, you got to do the scouting, and you got to make sure that you get it right.
Portland Timbers, Atlanta United, a blockbuster trade, perhaps, depending on those future incentives, the biggest in MLS history. We're going to go to break. 401-206-0MLS is the Hot Take Hotline. If you need somewhere to vent, comment, question, whatever, when we come back, LAFC, yet another expansion team going after the big guns.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email ExtraTime at MLSsoccer.com or tweet at ExtraTime Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
I walked out this morning and I wrote down this song. I just can't remember who to send it to.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental. Hanging out in the green room, Andrew Eby, David Goss, and Matt Doyle out in the Octagon. We're talking silly season, and we've got a lot to get to, so let's jump right into it. LAFC fans, you saw five players taken in the expansion draft. Tyler Miller, Latif Blessing, Marco Arana, Yuka Raitala, and Raheem Edwards. Of course, if you follow MLS and if you're watching this show, you probably do, you know that Raitala and Edwards were pretty much immediately flipped to Montreal for Laurent Simon, who was the 2015 Defender of the Year in this league. You also know that they got Walker Zimmerman. You may have also noticed that Walker Zimmerman and Laurent Simon had a little bit of a love-in on Twitter, where they both just like praised each other and said how excited they were to play together. And I was left wondering if LAFC's front office said, psst, throw a couple tweets out there, guys.
Oh, you didn't know Walker Zimmerman?
That's my conspiracy theory.
Walker
there.
Zimmerman's been an LAFC fan since he was a kid. And he's been he's had a Laurent Simon jersey.
I mean,
his
you
whole
saw
life.
How much passion he showed when he did the whole like lift your head up with the LAFC hat. He flipped it off his foot onto his head. He's been practicing
he's
that forever
the game.
For just this moment.
He changed the game
for just this moment. Then some more big news on Thursday. We've been talking about it for a long time, but Diego Rossi, 19-year-old Uruguayan, he got signed to a young DP deal. Second youngest DP in league history behind Fabian Castillo. This is a guy who scored 10 goals last season for Peñarol, one of the biggest clubs in South America. They just won a title. He can play striker or winger. I mean, Bob Bradley's jacked up. LAFC fans are jacked up. Doyle, how did they do this week?
It feels pretty good. It's weird that they traded two guys who are starting caliber left backs in this league, which is like the hardest spot to fill. But if you look at this group, they have, I like, I obviously the central defense, I like Miller a lot. I think he's a starting caliber keeper in this league, and he's going to be around for a long time. Omar Gaber is very good. The right back from Egypt, Vela, the new DP. I mean, this is sort of a new style, type of signing. Like every box is being checked so far. And you know, when and if they use their discretionary TAM, you're suddenly looking at a team that can have like a DP D mid, like go find the next Guido Pizarro and get that guy. And then, you know, a TAM level number 8, and maybe they can go after Sasha Kljestan as well. Like this is a team that can come screaming into MLS next year, just like Atlanta United did. And I haven't seen a move so far that has left me kind of scratching my head, which is, I think, what you want to see if you're a fan of this team.
Sasha Kljestan, you name-dropped him there. Christian Dyer reporting that LAFC are interested. They're talking to the Red Bulls. And then the next day he reported that more MLS teams are also interested in Sasha Kljestan, which sounds to me like the Red Bulls front office saying, hey, we'd like some leverage here, so let's go ahead and spread this around. Now, I do not doubt that multiple MLS teams would like to bring in Sasha Kljestan. I would be surprised if Sasha Kljestan did not want to go back to LA and reunite with Bob Bradley. That would make sense. I'm more intrigued, though, and this is difficult in being that Sasha Kalashin is the assist man in this league, the chance creator of the last 3 years, Dave, in Diego Rossi and that sort of profile. And we're going to keep talking about those guys because Ezequiel Barco is a very similar sort of player and profile. Maybe a little bit more of an investment as far as front-end transfer fee.
Well, also has shown more quality.
Sure, but this
– yeah,
you're right.
Level.
No, that's yeah, – that's, you know, that's a good point. This is exciting that these sorts of players are saying, you know what, MLS is a good first step for me outside of my home country.
Yeah, they have coaches that are big-name coaches, that are international coaches, that have convinced them that they're going to be a major part of what they're building. And so it's not like Diego Rossi's coming here to sit on the bench and try and earn a starting spot like he would be at Inter Milan. It's that he's one of the three or four cornerstones of LAFC, which is a team that's going to have an international profile because it's LA and because of who their ownership is and because of the way this league's growing. And so they see the opportunity there that, yeah, I can go here and still be noticed. And if I go somewhere and score goals, people are going to want me no matter what. And the national team is going to be interested in me no matter what. You just have to get that done. And so I think the interesting part about MLS is it creates that opportunity where you're going to get the big payday. You're going to get playing time, which you may not get in Europe immediately. And then we're still open to the idea that your career could still move around. And you're not here for the next 10 years. And so that worked with Almirón in Atlanta, and I think his success and the rumors around him and the potential sale of him and what's going on.
If you pay attention to transfer market, which, you know, take the other grain of salt, his value since coming to MLS has risen like $8 million. So, I don't know, it's a large number.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at his career trajectory, you might say, oh, this is a good move for me. Not only do I get to go to the U.S., maybe I get my green card, get to have a good time, get to be a part of history in L.A., but this is not I'm still going to move. I'm still going to get a good payday. I'm just 19 years old. Let's make it happen. Sasha Kalashin, Doyle, is he a good fit or would he be a good fit for what Bob Bradley is building?
I mean, I think he'd be a very good fit, right? Because you just drop him underneath Carlos Vela and Rossi, and there's your attacking trident. Very similar to what – I mean, similar in terms of where they operate on the field to – how Toronto line up, and obviously that's something that could work in MLS. And I do think that it's going to be important for LAFC to figure out how to get Vela in a position where you're not asking him to do a ton of defensive work. I understand that, you know, maybe they'll use him some on the right wing, but if you have him on the right wing and Gabber, who's more of an attacking fullback, you're kind of asking for it in the other direction. So I do think that putting a pure chance creator like Kalashin underneath two true forwards, that might be the most sort of fundamentally sound approach for LAFC in this first year, because then you could just build the structure out behind them. You could go with a four in the back or a five. You could keep it really tight at defensive midfield, you know, throw a couple of true ball winners behind Kalashin and attack with three. And that's similar to what Bob did in 1998 with the Fire. It was Peter Novak as the 10 with Rozov and I think Pabrodzny as the other forward. And they, for a good chunk of that season, they just attacked with three, which allowed them to get the defensive structure right. And I think that's what Kalashin could do in this situation.
Yeah, I look at this team, and one of the things a lot of people talked about when they made the Simon trade was that he and Zimmerman don't fit together. They're both athletic, they both go towards the ball, they're both ball hawks, and in my mind it fits if you turn into a three-man, five-man back line. You look at what Toronto does, for example, with Zavaleta and Mavinga, or Zavaleta and Haglin, and Moore is the intellect guy behind who watches it all work in front of him, who moves the pieces around. He allows the two people in front of him to attack the ball, to attack the attacking players as they come in, and he watches it all happen and moves pieces around. Simon and Zimmerman are like that, but times 100 if you can find the right guy to stick behind between them. You talk about Gobert on that right
wing
back.
Gives him freedom as well, huh?
Yeah, on that right wing back, and now you need a left wing back or whatever, but you get Rossi and Vela up top with no defensive responsibilities. And Sasha Kalashin fits in behind there and is the leading chance creator in the league, or can play deeper if he wants to. That's why the other thing with Kalashin is he's versatile. And that's why every team in MLS would love to have him, because he's talented. He can play, I think, in multiple positions in that midfield. You know he's a leader. He's the perfect pickup for this team. And that's why every other team in MLS doesn't matter what your team looks like. You can find a way to fit Sasha Kalashin in.
I heard a lot of people complaining, Red Bulls fans especially, and once these rumors came out, you kind of had some knives come out of nowhere on Sasha Kljestan and people complaining about who he is as a player. And I was a little surprised by that. And a lot of people were saying, oh, he plays too horizontally. He's not vertical enough. And one, I don't think that's true at all. And two, in this team, if you're going to have fullbacks bombing forward, that's okay because he'll create chances by proxy in both ways. And now all of a sudden he can get very vertical because you're so scared of him to open up the flank. So I think Bob coming in this year is so interesting with the amount of investment, the amount of TAM that's at play.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a completely different, you know, he's building a team in a different world from an expansion perspective than anybody has done before him, because you have an extra 2.8, maybe 4 million in TAM for him to play with. This is going to be so interesting to watch. How does this team end up? How do they perform in what was a weak Western Conference last year? How do the teams around him reinforce? And what's the paradigm that drives this league forward from a player acquisition standpoint? Because we talked to Darren Eales. We've seen what LA are doing. They're driving a standard that hasn't always been there, and there's going to have to be some teams that catch up. Let's dive into the rest of these moves here. The biggest headlines probably – from the waiver draft, right? Kip Colby going to Colorado.
The biggest headlines, you mean the only two players taken?
Yeah, Clement Diop going to Montreal, and then, like, 21 passes. Remy Gard thinks he can develop Diop, which maybe he can. He has incredible physical gifts. On the other side, anybody who was shocked by Kip Colby going to Colorado and reuniting with Anthony Hudson, his New Zealand national team coach, don't be shocked. That's like the sun rising every morning. Everybody knew that was going to happen. Some other news here, Nick Raimondo, Brooks Lennon, they're expected to re-sign with RSL. Those are kind of boxes that we figured would get checked. One that we wanted to be checked and we thought would, praise be to Pantarita, the Dynamo locked up Albert Elise. Reportedly for like 2.5 mil.
Yeah, you have to. He's a huge name, and he's one of the best players in the region. He's 21 years old. Of course you got to spend that money. And it was money well spent.
Yep, we're all happy about that.
Broken down for you there, Weedy.
New York City FC active. They signed Sweden international Anton Tinnerholm from Malmo, 26-year-old right back. They gutted the right back position in the offseason here. He was the 2017 Defender of the Year in the Swedish First Division. Won a ton. He's recently gotten in with Sweden. He's trying to get in that World Cup team. They really like him. And then they went and made a move for another right back, which you can help explain to us here,
Wait,
Doyle.
This was a huge moment in Matt Doyle MLS history. Doyle has been talking about Abdul Salam being traded for 2 years.
Yeah, that's
and
true.
It finally happened, Doyle. The sun finally rose.
For 1 year.
Okay, whatever it is.
Because, like, once he lost his I didn't think they should trade him after 2016, but once they moved Graham Zusi into the starting right back role, it seemed natural. And like
the years blend together, man. The years blend together. Kyrie Shelton is the player going the other direction, for those of you wondering. Continue, Doyle. Sorry about that.
Look, Abdul Salam is a starting caliber right back. And he lost his job, so it makes sense that there was interest in him around the league. And I think that getting Kyrie Shelton, who in my mind is a high upside young player, I know NYCFC fans soured on him and he didn't have a good year, but he would seem to fit into what Peter Vermees wants to do. And he has a little bit of the old flavor in terms of having big target wingers. Right, he can start hitting crosses to the back post now, and that's a guy who can maybe do something with him. This does also open up playing time in Sporting Kansas City for Jalen Lindsay, who's a right back, who's a homegrown from the U17 national team, and it, again, is a high potential player. And I think that maybe in a way, this is Sporting kind of learning the lesson from not getting Eric Palmer Brown enough run when he was 17, 18, 19 years old, and trying to be a little bit more forward thinking. Because as far as I can tell, Jalen Lindsay is now the top backup for Graham Zusi. And that should mean about 1,000 minutes at age 17 for this kid across all competitions. So it works out for Sporting KC.
I would love to see that happen. I think Peter Vermees probably won this trade, all things considered. Shelton 2 years younger than Abdul Salam. Abdul Salam coming into a team where he will be the backup. And I think he wins it just by virtue of the fact that Shelton seemed to fall out with Patrick Vieira. They just had to move him. They weren't going to play him. They hadn't been playing him. But he does have high upside. Now, it could blow up in Peter Vermees' face. So that grade could completely change in like 3 months.
This trade is not going to blow up in either team's face. These are two potentially good, probably serviceable players
trade. You're right.
In MLS. I just wanted to like get that out there before we put before we staked both these coaches' reputations on this one trade.
I'm not staking their reputations on it. Every move gets to be evaluated, though, Dave.
That's true.
Every single move. This one will be evaluated. Sporting KC, in like bigger news here, reportedly reached a multi-year agreement with an attacking midfielder on DP money. Johan Crozet, who I'm sure none of us really know who he is. He's 25. He comes from the Belgian First Division, a club that is not a huge club within that division, has not been particularly productive. He required a transfer fee. He can play the 10 or right wing. North-south midfielder per scouts, according to Sam McDowell, so per Sporting Kansas City is what that is. I'm a little bit – this one doesn't jump off the page. I'll just say that. We've been talking about a lot of moves with guys with really good pedigrees. This guy feels like a guy who should be a TAM signing and on DP money, and maybe that means he'll be a TAM signing and they'll buy him down. That's probably what it means. It just – I don't know. I'm a little baffled, dude.
It doesn't sound like the, we're going to spend big on attacking pieces, Sporting KC comment that we heard post-U.S. Open Cup around the playoffs.
And they're still talking about striker, but I don't know is that Kyrie Shelton? If it's just Kyrie Shelton, that's once again an issue.
There's
probably
been rumors about Baselli, who's down in Mexico, who played in Europe. Yeah, he's a big body. He's not super athletic. I don't love him as a player, but he's definitely an upgrade over Kyrie Shelton. So you've got that going for you. And I agree with you, though. I mean, you look at Victor Vasquez's resume, and then you look at this resume.
Victor Vasquez, the player of the year in
right.
Belgium?
Now, he's 5 years younger,
sure.
6 years younger.
Sure, sure,
so
sure.
If you think he's the same player for 6 years, okay. But like you said, this isn't changing the game for Sporting KC.
And it might. We got to wait and see. I mean, I will straight up admit that I have not seen this guy play. Yeah. I have not heard of him. That's okay. Maybe the scouting was spot on. Maybe they got this right. Maybe he needed a change of scenery, but that's a big TBD for Sporting Kansas City. LA Galaxy, big signing today. Norwegian Rosenborg center back. I'll give it a try here. Jorgen Skelvik.
There you go.
You think so?
I think that's pretty good.
Yeah, I felt good about that as well. 26-year-old. He's coming from a team that wins a ton in Norway, thereby he won a ton in Norway. Michael Ciani, Daniel Stairs, Dave Romney, the other CBs on the roster for the Galaxy. He is going to make a reported 900K or so, which would basically make him the highest paid defender in the league, so he better be good.
I talked to the Galaxy about him. They feel like he's super athletic and that he can really play out of the back. So.
Okay.
Those are two things they didn't have last year.
Those are two good attributes. Here's a side story in this that just ought to make your heart break if you're a New England Revolution fan.
Oh, great.
Claude Dielna is the highest paid defender in Major League Soccer, according to the Players Union. Didn't work out so well last year. Hopefully it works out better this year, but that is a little bit of a – that's tough. In other news here, Maxi Arruti, there's a lot of rumors around him. So, you know, sounds like he wants out, which
Red
it sounded
Star
like for
Belgrade.
A while. Yeah, I mean, his agent's doing work on all continents right now. Some other rumors that I thought were interesting that go along with the theme we have here with Diego Rossi and Ezequiel Barco. Jesus Medina – maybe to NYCFC. He's a 20-year-old from Paraguay. He's a winger. He's got like 70-plus games for Libertad. He got a cap against Mexico earlier this year. He's played in Copa Lib, Copa Sudamerica, 10-plus goals in the last two seasons. His highlights are cool, and they have thumping music behind them, so that's pretty sweet. Yeah, I mean, those are the rumors right now. So
yeah, so this TAM edition means that everyone's going to get 3 or 4 new starters.
Just means more fun.
Yeah, so there are a lot of players that have to come into this league this year. These segments are going to be hot and heavy for you.
Yeah, for a while, for a long time. By the way, I have an idea that I'd like to just throw out there. Fake MLS rumors. If you want to send us stuff.
We don't need fake ones. We have so many real ones.
And a lot of fake ones, too. 401-206-0MLS. Hit us with real ones. Hit us with fake ones. We want to hear them all.
Oh, you mean Wesley Sneijder's not going to play for San Jose this season?
Wait, hold on. Robin Van Persie to LA Galaxy?
Yeah.
Turkish media all over that one.
I thought Rafael Vandervaart was going to join Swell Park Rangers.
The Dutch agents are just, they're on fire right now.
I think they just like to be in L.A.
That's true. Let's get out of here. We're going to break on the other side of the mailbag. We'll see you in a second.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, driven by Continental and MLSsoccer.com. Go hit subscribe. Make sure you get this in your inbox every Monday and Thursday. A couple rumors that I glossed over here. Jeff Reuter reporting, and then, you know, Steve got following up here. MLS sources say that Galaxy have approached Crew SC to discuss Ola Kamara's availability, 34 goals in two seasons, and also that Giassi Zardes, one of the locations he could go, would be Columbus. Dave, your thoughts here? I know you're the biggest Ola Kamara fan
in the universe. I think Ola would be upset. I think he loves living in Ohio. So I hope it doesn't happen.
It would be good for the Galaxy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's a striker that scores goals.
Yeah, but I don't work for the Galaxy, so that's not my job right now.
I'm just saying. Just evaluate the move. The rumor is out there.
Yeah, any team in MLS that got Ola Kamara would be a better team.
Right. Well, Giassi Zardes is a weird one because his salary, he's a TAM guy. Doyle, it's like to find the right fit, to find the right suitor.
They need to fill that Kakuta Mane role, which is we overpaid for this dude that we don't really play that much.
Ah, Kakuta Mane might come back, though. There are rumors that this Union Berlin thing not going to work out for him. So we'll see. We'll see. Sam Stachel also reporting that Toronto likely to bring back Drew Moore. No shock there. But that it might not happen with Steven Betashore. Cap considerations getting in the way. They got Hassler. So if it costs too much, you've been with Toronto for like the last 3 years.
Yeah, they gave Hassler a deal, which was not very much money this year because we'll give you a huge bump next year. So they kind of locked into that, which makes it pretty difficult. And Betashore is one of those MLS guys who we see across right now with all these contract negotiations, which is he's a veteran. You really can't go lower than certain numbers and whether it's worth it at that number. But I thought he played the best game I've seen him play maybe ever in MLS Cup. So he's a guy that you want to try and keep around if you can.
By the way, we did not talk to you about this. We thought we were, and then circumstances conspired. You were at the victory parade.
Yeah,
victory. We were supposed to get your insight. How did you experience Jozy Altidore's epic speech? What was the crowd like?
Jozy Altidore's epic.
Did you get to touch the cup, or did they not allow that? White gloves only?
Yeah, I did not touch the cup.
He did protect the cup last year with his life.
Yeah, and I protected it this year with my life as well, although it was not called upon.
Gotcha.
I was prepared to lay it down.
But you were prepared to jump in front of it, shoot a bullet here out of nowhere.
Any
scenario. If somebody was going to shoot the cup.
If there was an avalanche, because it's Canada,
so I assume
there's avalanches there. So the parade was pretty cool. It was through downtown, so everyone came out on their lunch breaks. The streets were packed, actually, and it starts out from Air Canada Center, and you go under a bridge. And the supporters lead the march, and they're singing, and you're inside this tunnel. It's the loudest thing you've ever heard. And then the buses roll through behind, and it was a pretty cool moment. And you go up through the city, and Nathan Phillips Square was absolutely packed. To the nines, they did O Canada, and it was, you know, ringing out from every single corner. The players were in a pretty good mood.
Yeah, they seemed festive.
Yeah, they actually chanted through the anthem for a little bit because they didn't know it was happening. And they had, like, the Danny Diccio chant going. They were chanting for Sebastian Giovinco and then lifted him up because he weighs about 3 pounds. Giovinco's always on someone's back. He's always just riding someone.
Well, he's got to see.
Yeah, that's true.
He's got to see, man. It's like, you know.
Yeah.
It's like a kid at a sporting event.
For sure. They charged the front of the stage when they first got up there, and they knocked
the
over.
The players did or the fans did?
The players did, and they knocked over the supporter shield.
Nice.
Yeah, so.
That's for all these supporter shield truthers out there. Throw it on the ground.
I don't know that they knew it was even there. It was pretty
kidding.
Cool.
I love the shield.
It was pretty cool. It was pretty epic. That city really embraces that team. That city has a diverse group of fans that come from all over, or sorry, that club that comes from all over the area, that comes from all over the world, that, you know, lives and dies with it. And it's not a city that's won a lot of titles, but they're crazy about sports. All they talk about, they have 18 sports channels, and this was their title, and everyone was out on the street.
Seems like it was everywhere on TV, too, I was seeing.
It was on 8 channels, and everyone on the street was, oh, we finally won one. Thank God TFC brought us one. Let's do it again next year.
Can I get a shout-out to all those people that will never be invited to a party that I throw that were hating on Jozy Altidore for a speech? Get out of here.
So the Jozy speech.
You killers of fun.
So the Jozy speech, quote unquote, starts because they cut the music for it to start. And you look up and he starts talking and everyone took their breath collectively and was like, please let this go well. And I think it went really well. But you weren't sure the whole time through if it was going to go well.
Yeah, it was epic. He cooked that one up in the laboratory.
I think that was off the cuff.
I was going to say, that was the first time he'd experimented with those particular molecules, so to speak.
I think one of my favorite parts was Chris Mavinga stealing like the high-level broadcast camera and shooting the ceremony as like Larry Tenenbaum's talking. He's like rolling around shooting the players, shooting the fans, shooting the executives, and the TFC camera guy's like, I guess I don't have anything to do for the rest of the day.
Wasn't there like a BWP Tim Cahill camera celebration on a goal one time?
No, it was Henri. Wasn't it Henri?
Yeah, I don't know.
He went and sat in the broadcast camera. He, like, shot it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was pretty cool. It was a pretty cool few weeks of just, like, being around Toronto.
Yeah, man,
and being
like
around
I said, you
team.
Were with them for what felt like years.
Yeah, felt like 2 years. Maybe it was 2 years. And they're a pretty good team.
Yeah.
Like, in general, that MLS Cup, I sat down on the field and, like, it just played at a high level. It just played at a high speed. And there was a team that knew what they wanted to do.
Yeah, and they're going to get even better. They're going to chase the CONCACAF Champions League. That ought to be
please,
fun.
A lot of ETR fans that came up and had heat to throw at me and more at you guys through me, and I just blame you guys for everything. Yeah, they're like, who's the one who said Giovinco hasn't played well in 2 months? I was like, probably Doyle. They're like, it's definitely Doyle. I was like, solid call. I agree.
Oh,
some guy tried to
We're not even there. We're getting run over by the buses.
Exactly. Some guy tried to find me in Nando's, which I really appreciated. But the one thing I told all of them was, please just go to CCL Final. I will come back. I will stand outside in shorts in the cold if you want me to. I would love to see this team in a CCL
Final. CCL's in, like, the spring, so it'll be pretty –
in Toronto, it's probably frozen.
Yeah, it's probably seasonal. Adrian Bridges hit us up with something that I just would be remiss if I did not play. This is strange in every single way. 4-0-1-2-0-6. That's straight out of Shaft.
How many times have you listened to that?
Like 50 or so today. I just put it on loop and just let it roll through. I enjoyed it a lot. It's a little bit garbly in the you know, the audio of the voice, but you know what it is.
4-0-1-2-0-6.
Yeah, see, that's good stuff.
I think it starts off as Shaft, but then it really ends up in like a seriously major key at the end. If they had kept it like toned down a little bit, and then, I mean, it ends up being like a little musical theatery. Gosh, you know this. You're a big musical theater guy. Like, a lot of musical theater from the 70s in particular ends up going up to that high major key at the end. And kind of makes it, I don't know. I like it. I just think it needs to be workshopped.
You are nitpicking hard right here with a cat.
I was about to say, he's also cradling a cat.
Like, hugging.
Not in his lap. He's doing what you do with
this
Cam.
He's going skin to skin.
Say,
this is skin to skin. He's burping that cat.
Yeah.
He's definitely burping that cat.
General So missed me. I was gone for over a week, and she missed me, and she's showing her affection.
Jim Manolius via text here. He wants to know, do we know when Don Garber will make the announcement for the selected expansion teams? Well, Jim, Don Garber will not be the one making this decision. Just want to put that out there. It's a Board of Governors thing. They met in New York City today. So I can't give you a date here. I don't think anybody can. Soon, we will know the next two teams that hit Major League Soccer. All the
Didn't
coverage.
Didn't they announce
on
the date that they were going to do it like 6 months ago?
No, they said before the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
But you know how these things work.
Okay.
I'm not putting any money on anything other than the fact that we'll know soon. Matthew, the first year TFC fan that we roasted on the last show. Hey boys, Matthew here. You're amazing, and I love the programs. Y'all tore me up on the podcast. I'm a TFC fan from the first year, actually 18 months before when I was the 50th person to pre-order season tickets. And then I stood in the South End about every single game for 8 years. Then I moved to BC as soon as they got good. So no hard feelings. I agree about bandwagoners. Merry Christmas. Like, we thought he was saying this is his first year as a TFC fan. He's in British Columbia. And we like ripped him. As a bandwagon fan.
Sounds like you guys are a lot of fun to listen to.
Yeah, just worked him over. So sorry, Matthew. You were there since the beginning. We really apologize. Congratulations.
I got to tell you, without gas, man, quality control, quality assurance on the mailbag just does not work.
I'm surprised
you were missed,
David. I'm surprised the show gets out at all.
I am also surprised. You know, he won a title. He celebrated, I'm sure, in BC, or maybe he got back to Toronto. Matthew did. The reason he won that title, though, it's right here.
I just wanted to leave a big shout-out to Ben the Research Bear for giving the Sounders the freaking kiss of death by choosing them to win the MLS Cup.
Good job, Ben.
Yeah, he definitely was the kiss of death. So 2 years in a row, the Sounders fans can either thank or hate Ben Goss. Ben Goss.
What?
Oh my God.
What happened? What would be a Ben Goss? That's too much. Quality control.
I don't know, Weeby. I think
everything about that is off-putting. Dave is like, He's unable to deal with this.
Yeah, Weeby, I think you've got some problems.
I do. Sam Stachkel tweeted the other day, who's the MLS player most likely to have a KD-style fake Twitter account that he uses to defend himself in his own mentions? I thought that was an interesting idea, so I put it to the folks. John Leonard says Jermaine Jones. Jermaine probably has one. Jerry Savelli, Jermaine Jones, Jeff, son of Carl, Jermaine, or Dom Dwyer. Dom Dwyer is a decent shout on that one as well. Ali Bedoya, from a quote-unquote small business owner. That's an interesting Twitter name for you there. Jeff says Josie Altidore. Travis Adey says Kai Kamara, but he just does it through his own account, so he doesn't need it.
Well, I was
going to
say, so does Jermaine Jones.
That's true.
Jermaine Jones is not even a
fake account. Actually, there's no Twitter account. It's just Instagram Live.
Whatever. He doesn't need anything fake. Yeah. He says it straight out into a camera.
Dax McCarty from Dan Gunn.
Did you ask Dax while he was in here?
No, but I saw Dax on Twitter constantly on his own account, so yeah. I feel like it's on his own.
He's one of those that would have it but would accidentally like mess it like Katie right, did right. from yeah, the yeah, wrong yeah. one or like it from himself.
We had a Merritt Paulson guest out there. Merritt just deletes his tweets. Like Jermaine, he says what he thinks and he just deletes them. Shout out to Merritt. And then Perry Bedger has the right one. He says Ben Bear. He's definitely the one, and it's one where he says something nice about him and mean about Matt Doyle. So that's probably spot on for Ben.
That's great stuff.
It is. Greater than Sam Stachkel. What's up, Ben? And that's it for us. All the rumors are rolling in, 401-206-0-MLS. We'll let you know on the next show what our holiday specials will be. I talked to Julian Gressel, Tim Melia.
I sat down with Kellen Rowe, which was life-changing. I sat down with Kellen Acosta, which was awesome because Kellen Acosta lives our dream.
Obviously,
just like,
a big Kellen run during
that. Yeah. Oh, it was a huge. They actually had a battle, so it's going to cross over multiple days of them
gotcha.
Sitting in the same room saying, "I'm the better Kellen." Sat down with Jack Harrison and figured out where he's going to be over the next 12 months.
Ooh,
which was tantalizing. And Dwayne De Rosario, MLS legend and ETR interview legend.
Yep. Listen to those over the holiday break. We'll let you know when they are coming. Big thanks to Darren Eels. Big thanks to you guys. Hit us up. We'll see you on Thursday, everybody.